This meeting is now being recorded.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Can I have the next slide, please? The next couple of slides actually relate to the CME that is being offered for this webinar. It tells you that Dr. Wexelblad and Leslie Clark, research nurse at UH Rainbow Babies and Children, are going to be speaking today. The next slide will tell you that your speakers have no conflict of interest or financial gain for speaking on this webinar. And the next slide will tell you that this webinar has been approved for one AMA Category 1 CME credit and one clock hour of social work credit. Next slide, please. Here's our agenda for this afternoon. Dr. Wexelblad and Ms. Clark will be discussing with you a standardized process for identification and evaluation of a newborn with NAS. They will also talk with you about non-pharmacologic support of these infants and triggers for referral to a higher level of care. Next slide, please. Let's go ahead and get started with the key driver diagram. Dr. Wexelblad.
Okay, I'm actually taking this one, Beth. And thank you again for hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Can you hear? Okay. Thanks, everybody, and good afternoon to all our attendees, and welcome. Scott and I want to thank you for joining us today in this phenomenal effort to help Ohio's babies. It's really, really quite impressive if you see all the people and all the efforts that have been made and are being made. And again, thanks to all of you. You certainly make a difference as we're strengthening collaboration and beginning to utilize all this evidence-based care across Ohio. In our prior webinars, and hopefully this diagram is familiar to you by now, we have discussed compassionate care and non-judgmental support for these moms, as well as improving recognition of these moms and babies with NAF. And so specifically today, we'd like to explore some options for screening these babies in the Level 1 nursery, utilizing the LPSIT scoring tool, although we'll also cover what some of you are probably using as well, which is the Finnegan, the modified Finnegan. And we'll also be discussing in some depth non-pharmacologic treatments as well as when babies should be referred to an increased level of care. We'd like to hear from you certainly what you're doing now in your various nurseries, and hopefully we'll be able to learn from each other during our discussions today. And there may be something you're doing at your hospital that is new, even though it seems pretty commonplace to you. So we urge you to share and ask questions, please. Next slide. Again, every nursery across Ohio, be they level 1, level 2, level 3, plays an important role in this effort. One of the things that appealed to me, certainly when I first heard about this improvement initiative, was hearing it called the Ohio Protocol. And there's certain, you know, a lot of us in Ohio, you know, we're kind of proud of being here. And seeing how Ohio caregivers are working together across the board to create a seamless system for these babies is pretty impressive. Next slide. So this map of Ohio shows all the OPQC, OB, and neonatal participating hospitals. It's important to note that all designated children's hospitals in Ohio and 105 out of 107 OB hospitals in the state have participated in at least one OPQC QI project. And whether, as we've said before, a level 1, level 2, or level 3 unit, and whether a NICU or a special care nursery, OPQC has reached out to all. And this is pretty much about 98% of the hospitals that care for moms and newborns are involved in this OPQC effort to decrease variability in treatment and approach. And we want to say again to all of you, Level 1 nurseries are truly the front line in a lot of this and certainly critical to success in this effort. Next slide. As a brief reminder, these are the drugs that we are commonly seeing, both illicit and prescribed, and associated with NAS. It can be a challenge to identify these moms. We've talked about that, and certainly these babies at risk. And we'd like to now move into how these babies are identified in the newborn nursery. Next slide. So for our first poll, what we'd like to know is which NAS scoring tool are you using in your hospital? And I'm going to hand over to Beth so she can run the poll.
Thank you so much. We are interested in what scoring tool you're using at your hospital. Please indicate with your mouse, click on whether or not you use the Lipset scoring tool, the modified Finnegan, some other scoring tool, or you don't use the scoring tool at all when you're evaluating infants at risk for NAS. Please vote. Okay, we've got about 67%. See if we can run it up to 80%. Okay, good. A couple more are coming in. Jeff, could we see what we've got here? Okay, Leslie, there you go. 93% use the modified Finnegan.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully then we'll give them some more information and it might be useful as we move forward. Okay. And I'm sorry, and it looks like somebody doesn't use a scoring tool. So hopefully what we'll be able to present might be something that they might find useful as well. Okay. Next slide, please. So this is a statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics all the way back in 1998, and certainly, again, it speaks to the importance of consistency and objective criteria and standards in identification and treatment of babies with NAS. So their recommendation is that every nursery should adopt some type of abstinence scoring method, and that would result in more objective criteria for determining when pharmacologic treatment is necessary. Next slide. And so the tools that the literature identifies as being utilized most often were these five: the modified Finnegan, the Lipsis, the Ostria, the neonatal withdrawal inventory, otherwise known as NWI, and the neonatal narcotic withdrawal index. Next slide. And so the two that were really the most common were the modified Finnegan and the Lipsis. And what we found out after our last seminar was many people were not even aware that there was this thing called Lipsis, that modified Finnegan, people just thought that's what you needed to use. And so we thought we'd point out in a little bit more detail this webinar a little bit more about the Lipsis and discuss it a little bit more as one of the options that might be used. Lipsis is primarily measuring CNS and respiratory symptoms and is used as a screening tool. It makes it particularly useful for those nurseries who refer out when pharmacologic treatment is necessary. It has 11 items as compared to the 31 items in the modified Finnegan. And it is typically administered every 3 hours. The treatment trigger is a score of 4 or above. It is somewhat subjective, and it is useful to practice with colleagues, so scoring is fairly consistent in your nursery. But again, there's a lot of art of nursing, I thought, at least, in this tool. And again, very good communications between caregivers when using the tool, as well as utilizing non-pharmacologic intervention is important and can hopefully prevent the escalation of symptoms resulting in pharmacological interventions. The modified Finnegan, which many of you use, certainly many of the level 2 and 3s use it, and typically this is used not only as a screening tool, but more for monitoring and management to assist in the management of medication dosages, whether they're being increased or decreased. As you probably know, it's much more complex than the Lipsis with 31 items, as we've said, and is very resource intensive in both training to use it and in maintaining competency. It's pretty rigorous. So, and again, the triggers are equal or greater than a score of 8 times 2 or greater than 12 times 1. Next slide. This was an interesting thing that we found in researching the presentation from Dr. Loden et al. From Medical University of South Carolina, and how, again, it was more an endorsement of the Lipsis scoring system that it did align with the Finnegan scoring system, certainly in the level 1 nursery. It was very, very useful. Next slide. So, by and large, OPQC is going to recommend or is recommending the Lipsis tool for level 1 nurseries because level ones typically do not treat with medication, and it is useful, again, to screen and identify babies. Those nurseries, those level one nurseries who are very, very closely tied, in particular in children's hospitals that also have an OB unit across the way, it may be determined that nobody wants to change because they want to see consistent scores back and forth between the level one, level two, level three nurseries. We're now going to review the LPSIT tool and then hear questions and comments from those of you who might have a history of the LPSIT or planning to use the LPSIT or just want to know more about the LPSIT. So let's move to the next slide and we'll go through that. There was a link in the paper that went out that you can download this as a paper copy, so hopefully you were able to do that. And then there is a two-page direction sheet that goes along with this as well. So we have them in the slides, but if you haven't been able to do that, I urge you to do that, whether you can do that now or somebody can run off and do that for you, or you can do that later and share with staff. So this is the LPSIT tool. We'll go part by part through it. It'll be highlighted in yellow as we just show a sample of how to use this. And again, you'll see the signs, which you're pretty much typically used to, some brief directions at the top that are more fully explained with the direction sheet. Next slide, please. The LPSIT scoring tool, again, you're scoring each category with the highest score in that time interval. You're scoring every 3 hours for the first 72 hours if the baby is exposed to narcotics or opiates, or the first 96 hours if exposed to methadone or suboxone, and again, because those have a longer half-life. A total score of 4 is recommended for initiation of pharmacologic treatment. And again, because we're talking a little bit about the art of medicine and nursing here, that may vary, and I think it depends on what you're seeing with that baby. And no matter what scoring system you're using, you still have to use your clinical judgment. Next slide, please. Whatever method you have, whether you have the old stamper or you have an electronic record, et cetera, obviously you want the baby's name, date of birth, and medical record number. Next slide, please. And the date that the scores are being done, and day of life. And in particular, what's important to know here is date of birth is considered day of life number one. Next slide, please. We mentioned the signs, mostly CNS and respiratory signs, although there are some other, you know, things like stools, et cetera, here. Next slide, please. The scoring categories, score of 0 is pretty much what you might see in, quote-unquote, a normal newborn, nothing really off, you know, that would raise any kind of issue. You'll see the scores obviously increase as it moves to the right of score 1, and you can read that column, of score of 2, that column, or score of 3. Okay, next slide. The time intervals on this particular sheet, there are 8. If you looked at every 3 hours and, you know, obviously 24 hours, there are 8. If you needed additional columns, you could certainly, or decided you wanted to do it more often in a baby that was questionable, you could certainly use a second sheet or write on the back or however, you know, certainly using your judgment. Next slide. We would need signatures of whoever's doing the scoring on the bottom. And this pretty much, it looks almost like a med sheet. Many of you are probably familiar with. You just put your initials and signatures on the bottom, because straight to the right, you'll see where, you know, when you do the scoring, you're going to sign that was you who did the scoring. Next, and there's also a place on the far right for comments. So this is just one illustration. At 3 a.m., Cherry Ames has done a scoring, and you can see it totals 2. She has her initials at the bottom of the column, and the baby is, you know, while he might be, you know, kind of in her judgment, a little bit irritable, reflexes a little bit increased, but nothing alarming, but that's at 3 a.m. Next slide. Okay, 6 a.m., you see it inch up a little bit to 3. Muscle activity has started, a little bit of tremors they're seeing, and she's making a comment at 6 a.m. that the baby is difficult to console. Next slide. Okay, here you see now Sue Barton, next nurse, comes in, and now the baby is scored at a 7, at which point you would, you know, probably say, okay, we're looking at a baby needing treatment. Hopefully, care providers have been discussing this up till now, and, you know, sometimes it does, you know, it probably at 7 or 8, they were starting to see something, so this typically shouldn't be a surprise that it would go up to 7, and the hope would be that something has been done. And in between here, perhaps if they saw signs and symptoms escalating, that they might have done things with the different bundles, rewrap the baby, lower the lights even more, et cetera. And you'll notice now that Sue Barton has made comments that the baby is very jittery, she's rebundled, has notified the doctor, baby has been rewrapped and cuddled, but has become inconsolable. Next slide. Here, they've made the attempt, as you can see, and made the judgment to perhaps not treat yet, but have bundled, rebundled the baby, et cetera. Baby is less irritable, but in their clinical judgment at this point, I think you'll see the baby would probably be referred. And again, you can see the art in here, and a lot of judgment is going to be used. Next slide. The directions for the tool have been typed up. It's a 2-page document of front and back, and that's available at, I assume, at the website as well. But in the notification of this seminar on that page, there was a way to print these out. Next slide. I'm sorry. And that's the back of it. Next slide. So very quickly, we'd like to hear from any of you who may have tested the Lipsid since our last webinar about this on October 7th, those of you who are currently using it, and what were your successes and challenges using it, what is your experience with it, and does this look like this might be helpful for some of you who might say the Finnegan is much more complex than what you might want? Anyone?
You can press star 6 to come off mute. And you can also type in a question in the question box if you'd like.
Another question. This is Dr. Wexler talking. Wanted to make sure this is a screening tool. Are there any level ones that are currently treating at their sites, too? If you are, if you could let us know about that, too.
We have no typed-in questions, Dr. Wexler-Blatt and Leslie.
Okay. You do not have any. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, now Scott is going to talk about non-pharmacologic management of these infants and what strategies can be used to address what you are seeing when you look at these infants. Scott?
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. So non-pharmacologic bundle management of NAS sounds pretty straightforward. But it's very variable based on each nursery, based on if you have private rooms, if you have a nursery that you have available, if it's a pod system or versus individual room. And it also depends on your staffing. It also depends on the acuity. So it's sort of a nice thing to have out there to know this is what we recommend, but realize from it varies from shift to shift, from patient to patient. So the main things that we talk about is feeding on demand. Breast milk is encouraged, breastfeeding. The mom is in a treatment program, and she is not using any other illicit drugs, and she is HIV negative. If mom does not want to breastfeed or had used illicit substances, we recommend low lactose formula. And if the baby is having trouble gaining weight or losing more than 10%, those in the initial phase, we recommend going up to 22 calorie feeds so you can get below the 10% weight loss and show adequate weight gain. Swaddling is a big portion, low stimulation if possible, rooming in, and clothed cuddling. Next slide. Other interventions that are cited is skin-to-skin care instead of clothed cuddling, which we all know as kangaroo care, rocker beds, massage therapy, music therapy, aromatherapy, and color therapy. Next slide. So what we're going to do over the next couple of slides is go through each one of the symptoms by system, and then on the following slide show you what the non-farm recommendation is for those. So first, we talk about the central nervous system disturbances. You can see excessive or high-pitched crying, sleeplessness, myoclonic jerks, tremors, jitteriness, irritability, hyperactive reflexes, and excoriation from this movement. Next. And so here are the techniques that we would recommend for taking care of these infants. So if the infants have an excessive or high-pitched crying, we'd like to reduce the environmental stimuli. Holding the newborn infant firmly and close to the body, a gentle rocking, talking, singing, humming, use of an infant sling. I know some of our level twos and threes, and I don't know about the ones, would be a good question, actually bring in cuddlers to come in and hold these babies if the parents aren't available. Sleeplessness is obviously a big problem that these infants have. Trying to get them to sleep is hard, but wrapping them or swaddling infant, minimalizing handling, going skin-to-skin contact, not waking the baby if they are asleep to do a routine vital, or and trying to feed on demand will help if the infant is actually finally falling to sleep. If they're having myoclonic jerks, tremors, jitteriness, hyperactive reflexes, once again, cluster care. Try to reduce the lighting, decrease noise level. Massage and baths have been shown to help with this. And then for excoriation, remember this is on the chin, knees, elbows, toes, and nose. We don't consider excoriation when you're scoring for the buttocks. So all these diaper rashes that the babies have from having excessive stools, diaper breakdown, that does not count as excoriation when you're scoring in either the Lipset or the Finnegan scoring. And we want to demonstrate safe sleep, the ABCs of sleep, always alone on the back in the crib. Is a great thing that's a model to these families, covering with a soft cotton sheet when you're wrapping the baby up can help with the excoriation on the chins, knees, elbows, toes, and nose. Next slide. So then if we switch out of the central nervous and talk about the metabolic, vasal, motor, respiratory disturbances, those include sweating, hyperthermia, nasal flare and tachypnea, nasal stuffiness and excessive nasal secretions and sneezing. And the next slide here shows what we'd recommend for treatment. So for sweating, you want to clean the skin regularly, dry clean clothing and bedding. For hyperthermia, you want to ensure adequate hydration, reduce environmental temperature, avoid heavy bedding and clothing, dress or swaddle in loose light fabrics, like we talked about with the excoriation. And then skin-to-skin contact, we use it for rewarming, but it also will maintain a normal temperature also. For nasal flaring, if infants have a nasal flaring or tachypnea, we do want to monitor that. So the respiratory issues sort of trump everything. We need to monitor to make sure that there's not an underlying illness happening. So we need to be able to observe the respiratory efforts to make sure that there's not an underlying disease, a cardiac disease that's manifesting itself as a respiratory illness or another underlying cause. So we have to remember that babies with NAS or been exposed to opioids are also at risk for normal newborn illnesses. And the infants having nasal secretions or excessive nasal secretions, gentle bubble suction, if only if there's obstruction. Don't want to just be doing bulb suction for the sound. If you can, too much suctioning can cause more swelling. Next slide. So GI disturbances. These infants have excessive, frantic, uncoordinated sucks and rooting. They're poor feeders from this uncoordinated suck. They have a lot of regurgitation and vomiting. They also all have loose or watery stools. And this next slide will show you what the non-farm bundle would recommend. So for those infants that are having excessive frantic sucking, apply mittens if they're scratching themselves. It says consider pacifier. I would say give pacifier. It's really something. These infants need to suck on something. They're going to suck on anything. So pacifier use is definitely something recommended. If they're poor feeders due to their uncoordinated sucking, let them feed on demand. These infants sometimes will want a snack. It's hard for nursing care to do if your baby's just fed 45 mLs and an hour later is acting up and sucking. Giving them a feed again is definitely something, letting them feed on their demand. If they have a higher caloric need, they're burning up calories. So feeding more, even twice as much as a normal infant, bottle fed infant, is definitely the norm. Trying to reduce environmental stimuli during feedings, frequent small feeds, sometimes help. Excessively, they're having excessive vomiting. You want to make sure that you're weighing and assessing your hydration status. Carefully monitoring the fluid intake and weight gain or loss, and excessive coordination, and even treating them if they're having too much difficulty with sucking and swallowing. Give them the support, the cheek and the jaw, like you would with a late preterm infant. If they're having excessive spitting up or vomiting, burping at the end of feeds, but sometimes it's been shown that rubbing instead of patting may decrease the stimuli. And avoid excessive stress. And then for loose or watery stools, frequent diaper changes and using a barrier cream. Most of the time that you're going to have to break out and you're a pharmacist and get your special diaper cream ordered or barrier ointments on there. This is definitely something to start doing at the first sign of any breakdown. And then also doing some air time to let the excoriation heal up. Next slide. So I think there's been a couple of questions typed in about the non-farm stuff. So I'm going to answer those first, if that's okay, and then we can start taking other questions. So there's one question with low lactose formula. It's any of the low lactose formulas. We don't have a preference of Similac versus Enfamil, but any of those low lactose formulas would be acceptable. And if the family prefers a soy, which is no lactose, that's also definitely fine. I know that we have utilized, partnered with our level 3 hospitals to supply the 22 calorie low lactose formula in those infants that have been losing weight. Usually you would, if you have the concentrate, usually you can mix that up without having a formula room. If your hospital does use powder, or ready to feed, then you really couldn't, sometimes it's hard to get the 22 calorie made in your own level 1 nursery or level 2 nursery. So sometimes partnering with your referral hospital, say, I have a baby who's doing well, as if having some excessive weight loss, we'd love to try them on 22 calorie, a low lactose formula first, and that's been shown to help. And then there's also another question about the breastfeeding of mom's hepatitis B or hepatitis C positive. I assume it's regarding breastfeeding. So the AAP states for hepatitis C that as long as there's no cracked or bleeding nipples, breastfeeding is acceptable. Hepatitis B is not a contraindication to breastfeeding. So as long as there's no cracked nipple or bleeding, breastfeeding is acceptable. And then there's another question about barrier cream, mixing two combined creams. So I know a lot of places have their pharmacy mix up a triple barrier, anything, as long as you're having something that's going to protect the skin from the frequent loose watery stools. I don't think there's ever been anything to show that having your pharmacy make up a special mix has done anything better. Leslie might have a better understanding from the literature review that she's done, but I think any barrier cream that you guys are utilizing or already have available in your pharmacy is going to be an acceptable barrier to use, and plain old-fashioned Vaseline is sort of still a great barrier to use. So those are the type-in ones. So let's go back to Beth, and she can open it up for questions for other.
Thank you, Scott. If you'd like to come off mute and ask either Scott or Leslie a question, you can press star 6.
And as we're waiting, this is Leslie again. I wanted to ask if there was anybody from Grant and Riverside in Columbus. We had heard of this. I attended it via a webinar October 3rd, Caring for the Addicted Mom and Her Newborn, and a Mary Griffiths and Suzanne Davlin, who had OT and PT for neonates respectively, gave an exceptional presentation about what stresses newborns and techniques that they're using, things like firm pressure and when you weigh the baby, keep the baby bundled, and then just weigh the blanket later so you can subtract that. But all those things because of the baby's hypersensitive CNS system. And they were just interesting techniques to keep the baby from being stressed. And we don't necessarily think about weighing the baby or changing the baby's diaper as being necessarily stressful. So I was curious if anybody was on from Grant and Riverside, or even Nationwide as well.
And if anybody's afraid to talk, if they could maybe type in to the answer question box, does any of the level ones on the phone, does anybody treat at their site?
Dr. Wexelblatt, we do have Firelands. Linda Ritchie is on from Firelands, and she tells us that they are a level one hospital, and they do treat. They treat approximately 6 babies a year. And Sonia is on from Defiance, and she said, I work with a level one hospital. We do not treat with medications. We consult with a higher level of care, and our Finnegan score cutoff is 8 or higher, and we transfer if that consult determines that medication is needed.
And then going back to everybody that was using the Finnegan scoring system, did any of the sites use the inter-user reliability scoring tool that is available?
So that you can make sure that each nurse is scoring as her colleagues are scoring, is that right?
That's correct. It's Karen Diapolito has a program out there that has a video of two infants that you score together to show and sort of defines everything the same. It's been shown to help inter-user reliability. So night shift is scoring the same as day shift, and mm-hmm. nurse A is scoring the same as nurse B. So it's a tool that all of our level 2s and 3s utilize if they were using the Finnegan score just to improve the inter-user reliabilities, which has been shown to decrease a length of stay and treatment need because everybody is speaking the same language. So since I think it was 93% of our listeners were using the Finnegan score, I'm just curious if they were aware of this tool and or how they utilized it.
Linda Ritchie from Firelands in Sandusky it says, yes, Firelands uses the Inter-Rater Reliability Tool. And Rona asks, will we get a copy of the PowerPoint? Yes, you will. It'll be posted on the opqc.net website after this webinar. And also the Finnegan scoring is going to be available or is available to you now as part of the invitation to the webinar.
The LIPSIT scoring.
Did I say Finnegan?
Yeah.
I meant to say lipsets. I think I said Finnegan because Michelle has a question. We use the Finnegan scoring as well. I wanted to verify before I submitted my answer. So, Michelle, I'm not sure where Michelle is from. Can you tell us where you're from, Michelle? They use the Finnegan? I'll let you know when we find out where Michelle is from. And Deborah Swigger writes, there is a concern from one of our nurses who reviewed the lipsit form. There was the 3 hours. Since vital signs are completed every 4 hours, she was wondering about disturbing the baby. Leslie, can you speak to that?
I think what probably you would want to do is go ahead and certainly you're going to be observing the baby anyway. I would not see an issue with aligning it with feedings, but if you notice the baby kind of increasing in any of the signs and symptoms, you just want to do it more frequently. But, you know, at least to try it and see what happens. I think, again, what we're finding is most of these scoring systems are an art in and of themselves, that there's no one that is perfect. And so I would just urge them to at least try it. And from the poll we took, it looks like everybody is using the Finnegan. So to, attempt to align it and say, okay, let's do the Finnegan and let's do the lipsets at the same time and see how it works out. It would seem to me it would not hurt, at least initially, especially since you're observing the baby no matter what, whether you do it every 3 or 4 hours. Scott, what do you think?
I would always try to cluster care, so non-disturbing. So if your baby happens to be waking up at a two-hour feed, you then score then, and then knowing that the next feed might be 4 hours. So, you know, the whole idea is to see a trend. So if you start the scoring, and the whole idea of doing Q3 is to get hopefully 8 scores so you can see what the trend is and to notice that there's an increase and maybe you need to start thinking about sending the infant. So the whole idea of clustering care is what I would keep in mind, and it's not like a medication that needs to be giving on the dot at the designated time. It's a scoring tool, and I would do it with cares and try to cluster it when the infant is ready to be scored.
Good.
By the way, excellent question.
That is a good question. Sonia tells us, too, that Defiance uses the inter-rater reliability tool. It sounds like at Defiance, the nurses do this in their annual competencies. And then when the shift changes, the ongoing and the off-going nurse do one together so that there's agreement at shift change, which is just an excellent idea. It sounds like because the problem of NAS is been so widespread that this is becoming something that all the units are doing, or many of them are doing. We do have a question about the October 3rd webinar, Leslie. You referred to that earlier, and a speaker wants to know, is there any different information from that webinar that you would refer people to other than what we talked about today?
That was given by Ohio Health. Now, let me see. I have a website as ohiohealth.com, and I understand that they do keep their presentations online for a while. So that's all I can tell you. I think that we had actually spoken about putting some kind of link up on the OPQC website. The specifics about the OT and PT that presented, it was really fascinating when they talked about how the babies can actually pick up the anxiety or lack thereof from their care providers, and again, the care provider being a part of their environment. So I'm hoping that perhaps, in one of the upcoming learning sessions that OPQC does, we perhaps can bring some of these folks together to present a little bit more detail. So I'm hoping that helps. And again, it's ohiohealth.com. I do have a contact person if people are interested. Can I give that? Is that okay?
Sure. I think that Doctors Hospital wants to spread the word about the materials available from that conference. So I think they'd be grateful if you would, Leslie.
Okay, so the person's name, her email is S as in Sam, ULEMA dot Lewis, LEWIS, at OhioHealth.com. And the conference was given October 3rd, Caring for the Addicted Mom and Her Newborn. And I did speak to her, and she said they were going to have a link at their website. So you may want to email her and find out a little bit more about it. It was actually a sold-out conference, and so we had to listen via, you know, telephone and webinar.
Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. We have no other questions at this time. Is there anyone who would like to speak a question out loud? Press star 6, and you can talk. Okay, that's all we've got right now.
Okay, Scott, next slide.
Next
for
slide.
Scott.
Yep. Can we go to the next slide? Cool. Okay, great. So when to transfer from the level one to the referring hospital? So when all non-pharmacologic interventions have been exhausted and the score for the infant still remains at a treatment level greater than 4 or above for the Lipsit, or greater than 8 times 2, or greater than 12 times 1 for the modified Finnegan. The goal is by using and optimizing the non-pharmacologic measures with a consistent scoring system, fewer infants will then need pharmacologic therapy. And that's what we've been showing with our other cohorts. Next slide. And then it's also, I think Leslie was going to talk about this, about how to make sure you document what non-pharm interventions that you've done.
One of the parts of the quality initiative is that the level twos or threes who are then doing the pharmacologic treatment want to know is what kinds of things were done before the pharmacologic treatment were initiated. And so I am aware that one level three will be working along with some of their referring hospitals to try to streamline their documentation and make it easier to pick up what was done before the baby was transferred. And I would urge everybody just to make sure that you are documenting whatever non-pharmacologic items you're doing before you transfer the infant to the next level of care for the pharmacologic treatment. Next slide. And so I think Scott and I both would say, and I'm going to open it up too for him to speak as well, but level ones play a really critical role in identifying these babies and screening these babies. And we'd like to hear any thoughts and suggestions you have for now and moving forward. What was helpful for you? What other things might you recommend moving forward? Scott?
Yes. You have to remember that most of our level threes that are giving all this information and leading the way with the guidelines, actually a lot of them have no babies born in their hospitals. They're all dependent on our level ones and twos to refer them. And so the frontline folks are the level ones and twos who are having these moms deliver there. And so really one of the biggest interventions is optimizing the non-pharmacologic bundle at the birthing hospital to try to prevent the need for any type of transfer at all. And so there is definitely, like Leslie said, this is where the biggest bang for the buck is where these moms are delivered at their level ones or twos. Any questions? You guys have been extremely quiet compared to every other webinar. So if you want to keep on typing and stay quiet, that's totally fine, but please type in any questions.
Right now, we do have one question. Is anybody drug screening every patient on admission? And another question, while people may be writing and or coming off mute on star 6, to answer if anyone is drug screening every patient on admission, here's another question. How do you determine the volume of formula for the baby?
So I can answer about the drug screening. So I know that the Greater Cincinnati Health Council, which is involved, I think, 13 to 14 hospitals, I'm not exactly sure on the exact number, has started in September, past September, recommending universal drug testing on all moms in our delivery system. So we've been doing that in our Cincinnati region since September of 2013. We've had actually a webinar about that for the level twos and threes about universal drug testing versus universal drug screening. So drug screening is something that every hospital should be doing according to ACOG, and that's making sure that every mom that comes and delivers has a questionnaire asking about any, using one of the five questionnaires available about any drug use or abuse. We decided to go and do universal drug testing in our region where you just actually obtain a drug test on the mom on her admission. Is any other region doing, besides our in Cincinnati region, doing universal drug testing?
Sue says not at Wood County. I do want to remind everyone that what Scott is referring to is discussed in the slides that are on the OPQC website from last month's NAS webinar, and the presentation was called Legalities and Practicalities, and the nuances of screening versus testing and what Cincinnati, the whole Cincinnati area, did to come together in this decision is all included in that slide deck.
And then to answer the other question, somebody had a question typed in, and how do you to determine what volume to stop the infant at?
Right. She was interested in avoiding overfeeding. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so the way I would answer that is that these babies have a much higher need, a caloric need, than your normal infant, and I would not limit feeds. As long as the spit up is, they're able to maintain their weight, it's almost a laundry issue. It's not a medical issue as long as it's not bilious, and they're not, and they're able to maintain or even gain weight. So having infants take in the hundreds, going through two ready-to-feed bottles is not unheard of with a term infant that is withdrawing. And so making sure that I don't think you can overfeed these infants from my experience.
It's a great question. We have a question about testing the baby's umbilical cord versus urine or meconium.
So those are actually great questions, and each one has its advantages and disadvantages. The advantage of umbilical cord and meconium, it gives you a large picture of what the baby's been exposed to for the last 20 weeks. The metabolites are accumulated in the meconium or the Wharton's jelly around the umbilical cord. The problem with umbilical cord and meconium testing, those are send-outs, and the mass spec that is done on them, the turnaround time is usually 3 to 5, anywhere from 2 to 3, 5 days. So it's not a very good quick turnaround. The other problem with umbilical cord and meconium testing is it doesn't tell you when this baby was exposed to these drugs. So if they were exposed at 25 weeks gestation to 30 weeks gestation, that infant's not going to have withdrawal when it comes out because the system, the drug's already left the body. Urine has its advantages is that it gives you a window of 3 to 5 days to let you know what the baby's been exposed to acutely, to know if the baby's at a higher risk for withdrawal. Obtaining urine on an infant, though, is sometimes difficult to do. We're reliant on the mom saving the diaper for us. Or baby's first urine is the most important, and sometimes the babies go ahead and on your delivery table are urinating before we even have a chance to capture it. So it's hard to obtain, but the benefit is that it gives you the best indicator what the baby's been shown to been exposed to acutely to give you a better understanding of this baby's at a higher risk for withdrawal. And that's why we've done universal maternal testing because it's much easier to collect. And sometimes the infants don't have a urine or meconium for the first 24 hours. So by the time you even collect that data, can even collect a sample, you're already at the 24-hour mark. what a great question that we have done a whole webinar also, I think, on that testing on the OPQC website. You can see that, too.
Good. That was the last question we've got. Could we have the next slide, please? I want to thank Scott and Leslie. That was a fabulous presentation, a lot of really good, useful information. Remember that you all are able to download the LipSITS tool and instructions from the webinar reminders you were sent. And I want to remind you, too, that we've got two excellent webinars coming up. The next on November 3rd and November 6th, it's the same webinar offered at noon, is called Progesterone as a Primary Intervention to Prevent Preterm Birth. Jay Imes will be the speaker on that webinar. And as many of you know, there are 12 new IFAS variables. There has been clarification on three additional IFAS variables and some changes, particularly a deletion of the unknown choice on quite a few other variables. And all of those will be discussed on webinars on Friday, November 14th and Monday, November 17th at noon. And they are both, again, the same webinar offered twice. So we hope that you will be able to sign up and learn from both of those. Next slide, please. Let us know if you have questions. We can be contacted through the OPQC website. You can contact us by email at the address at the top of the screen. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We are delighted to have you as part of this webinar series. And if you want more information, just let us know. Thank you very much for your time and participation today. There are great questions and really good discussion. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.